Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller. We're going to be talking about digestive health in the first half of the show with Benjamin Brown about his book, The Digestive Health Solution. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking to some experts who are going to tell us about exercise and the best way to lose weight and stay healthy without doing your body harm. But before we do that, here's Reg with the health news.
First up, teens may have an increased risk of psychosomatic symptoms, physical problems caused by mental distress, if their parents separate or divorce, a new study suggests. Those who lived mostly with one parent due to a family breakup had the most psychosomatic symptoms, while those who lived in the same home with both parents had the fewest. Children whose parents had joint custody arrangements had fewer psychosomatic symptoms than those who lived mostly or only with one parent, but still had more than those who lived with both parents in the same home. Although this study found a connection between teens' symptoms and their family living situations, the study wasn't designed to prove cause and effect. For the study, researchers analyzed data from nearly 150,000 Swedish youngsters aged 12 to 15. The study was published online April 27th in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. New research from Taiwan uncovers more evidence that women may have a tougher time recovering their memory after concussions. Scientists don't know why the brains of women seem to respond to these brain injuries differently from those of men, but experts think it might have something to do with the differences in male and female brains or the way in which men and women are injured when their heads hit something. At issue are concussions, also known as mild traumatic brain injuries. According to the Brain Injury Association of America, mild refers to the initial blunt trauma itself, not its consequences, which can be severe. Concussions have gotten tremendous attention in recent years in the world of sports, and researchers note some research has shown female athletes suffer concussions at a higher rate than male athletes playing similar sports. The study appears in the online April 28th issue of the journal Radiology. A new look at what kinds of foods might help people keep their weight in check as they age found not all calories are created equal, and some foods are not as bad for the middle-aged waistline as many believe. While men and women who ate plenty of nuts, peanut butter, fish, yogurt, and low-fat cheese tended to lose weight, other foods commonly seen as unhealthy did not seem to make a difference in weight. In general, the researchers report adults gained more weight as the glycemic load in their diets rose. A white flour bagel, for instance, has a glycemic load of about 25 units. In contrast, a serving of quinoa has a GL of around 13, and a serving of chickpeas has a GL of only 3. The findings, reported online in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, are based on 24 years of dietary information from nearly 121,000 U.S. health professionals. And finally, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy might offer an alternative for people with depression who don't want to take antidepressants long-term, British researchers say. Their study, published April 21st online in The Lancet, found this new therapy was as effective as antidepressant drugs in preventing a reoccurrence of depression over a 2-year period. Mindfulness-based cognitive therapy brings together two treatment approaches. Guided mindfulness practices, which aim to increase awareness of negative spirals, are combined with aspects of cognitive behavioral training, a short-term therapy that teaches skills to help resist or counter damaging thoughts or moods. The program is intended to train the mind and body to respond more constructively to experiences in hopes of preventing another slide into depression, says the researchers from the University of Oxford in England.
Hey, thanks for that, Reg. Well, our first guest, Benjamin Brown, is a naturopathic physician. He has written a book, The Digestive Health Solution. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Calling all the way from England this afternoon, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, calling you from London in England here. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the book. You actually wrote this book after you experienced some stomach problems yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the book came about in part because of that. So I was traveling overseas and developed what most listeners will know as like traveler's diarrhea or a travel bug, and basically I got it pretty bad and developed things like diarrhea and pain and things while traveling, and continued through and continued to get quite sick and ended up in hospital while traveling, and resolved a lot of the acute symptoms with treatment, but then sort of more gradual symptoms started to set in. And this may be less familiar with the listeners. This is something we call post-infectious IBS. And what that means is that when that acute infection goes, you can still get sort of long-standing symptoms. So I started to dig into treatments for myself initially and realized that there was a real lack of good resources. Well, that's what I felt anyway, for people with not only post-infectious IBS, but IBS due to other causes as well. And that's kind of what the book's about, is all these different things that can cause IBS and how you can address them.
Well, now that you're the expert on IBS, what percentage of the population has irritable bowel syndrome?
Yeah, it's surprisingly common. So it's estimated in industrialized or westernized populations like ours, it's about one in four people.
Wow.
which is pretty high. It's a big problem.
What are the symptoms, and what defines IBS?
Yeah, so it's a funny diagnosis in that it's typically a diagnosis by exclusion, and it is purely symptom based. So what that means is that often people end up with a diagnosis when nothing else can be found. So more serious illnesses will be ruled out, and you'll be labeled with IBS. And symptom based, it's based on a collective of a handful of symptoms, basically diarrhea or constipation or alternating between those two, bloating and distension, which are two distinct things. So you can feel bloated, but distension is a physical expansion of your waistline. And then abdominal pain is one of the more characteristic symptoms that fall into this. But these are the textbook diagnostic symptoms. However, there are a lot of other symptoms that often exhibit with IBS, including other digestive symptoms, but also things people may not think are associated with digestive ill health, like anxiety, headaches, and muscle pain.
Now, is anxiety caused by IBS, or is it a result of is it causing IBS? Like, is it a circle?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So what's interesting is that your gut and your brain are kind of connected, which sounds a bit crazy, but your head and your brain are constantly speaking to each other biochemically. So we call this scientifically the gut-brain axis. And basically what that means on a practical level, getting away from the science, is that your mood can affect your digestive system and your digestive system can affect your mood. So to answer your question, there's no clear-cut answer, but the reality is that stress could be exacerbating symptoms, and your digestive problems could, in fact, be causing anxiety, at least to some degree. So it kind of works both ways.
Benjamin, at what age do people usually first get the symptoms of IBS? When does it come on?
It's not a... As far as I know, there's not a specific sort of age, but it is more common in younger age. So 20 to 30s is more characteristically, IBS-like symptoms. Whereas in older age, there's more often other underlying causes of these things. But as far as I know, there's no real clear, age where this will pop up. It's often more so related to, adverse events in people's life, like an infection. Mm. Or dietary and lifestyle factors.
Now, what does modern medicine, Dr. Brown, say, or what can it do for people with IBS for the most part?
Yeah, so this is one of the problems with IBS for the people who suffer from it, is that there are no real clear solutions, basically. Typically the way it works in a more conventional sense is some of the core underlying causes may be looked for. So we know that lactose intolerance, you can test for that, can be identified. Gluten sensitivity could be tested. But beyond that, typically people, are left wondering what's, going on, and they're not given a lot of effective solutions. So there are drugs that are sometimes used to relieve symptoms, such as stopping diarrhea if it's severe, or perhaps mitigating some of the pain. But even those are not going to solve the problem and are not that effective at best. So the reality is a lot of people are left untreated and with significant symptoms for the, you know, for the rest of their life.
I've heard of people going to the doctor and, you know, saying, you know, they have these problems, and the doctor telling them that it's all in their head, that, you know, that is that a possibility that it's, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunately, it's a bit of a sort of longstanding stigma, is that, you know, if you've, you know, got these symptoms, they could be just all in your head. And part of the reason for that is because stress clearly can exacerbate them. Mm-hmm. But part of the, you know, the sort of underlying premise of the book, I guess, is that is to really make it clear to people that it's not all in your head. And if you're told that, you really need to question the advice you're being given, because it's, as I've just mentioned, it's bi-directional, you know, so the, you know, the stress symptoms will exacerbate things, but it's often that your digestive system needs work, not your head, so to speak. So it's really, you know, important that that gets across.
Now, you talk about the digestive system needing work. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so one of the things we know about IBS is that although it's this sort of, you know, enigma, it's a diagnosis by exclusion, and there's not a lot of tests that are really used to identify what's going on, we do know that there are really clear problems with the digestive tract, and these issues going on can explain a lot of the symptoms. So one of the most sort of unifying factors that we know is present across people with these symptoms is a change in their gut bacteria, for example. And we do know that in a lot of cases, improving the balance of bacteria in people's digestive system with things like probiotics, for example, can result in dramatic improvements. And what's interesting is that that could also improve people's mental health and well-being, which is pretty remarkable. But that's a great example of how getting that digestive system back into balance can improve, you know, not only the symptoms of IBS, but actually improve your emotional well-being as well.
For those people that don't know what probiotics are, what are they, and where do people find them? Like, how do they work?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good question. So probiotics are a live bacteria, and they're usually taken as a dietary supplement. You can find them sometimes in yogurt or fermented milk drinks as well. And they do naturally occur in some fermented foods as well, things like, you know, kimchi and sauerkraut and these kinds of foods. But probiotics are typically the best way to use them if you're looking at them as a kind of medicine to resolve your symptoms. And there's quite a lot of different ones available. But the important thing is, you know, for listeners, is a couple of things if considering a probiotic to resolve digestive symptoms. Is one, you want to look for one that has some clinical evidence to show that it works. You know, other probiotics might work, but there's no guarantee. So there are some great ones out there with clinical studies that, you know, have proven benefits. The second thing is to stick with it. So people often take these things thinking, oh, it's just going to, you know, it hasn't worked. I've only used it for a couple of days. And the reality is that's not long enough. And typically clinical studies show that you need a minimum of 4 weeks of daily use to start to see really significant improvements in symptoms. So find a good product, you know, that's been shown to work, and, you know, use it daily consistently for 4 weeks is a bit of a take home there.
Mm. Dr. Brown, I was going to ask you about, in terms of probiotics, is stronger necessarily better? Like, what, you know, we see these really, really high doses into the billions in some of these probiotics.
Yeah.
Is that necessarily better, or, you know, what levels are recommended?
Yeah, it's a great question, and there's no clear answer. Unfortunately, there is this sort of trend towards stronger is better. The reality is that's not the case. So higher isn't necessarily better. The problem is we don't know what dose is optimal. So some probiotics, for example, have been shown to work in the millions, and others, as you rightly point out, in the billions or even trillions of bacteria, which is really remarkable. The reason for this difference is that clinical studies often are just the best guess of what they think might work, and often they'll put, you know, high levels in just to make sure it does if you're investing a lot in a clinical study. So the reality is we don't really know, but the best guide that we have for choosing an optimal dose is matching the product you're using to the clinical study that's been done on it for IBS. So you know, it's up to you to, you know, get in contact with a, you know, probiotic manufacturer or producer and just say, look, is there any evidence on this? And if so, what dose was used?
We're talking with Dr. Benjamin Brown about his book, The Digestive Health Solution. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out how you can heal up your stomach.